morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, December 3rd, and ask if the audience would please join Wayne and I as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning again. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes. We have the November 26th.
Move approval.
And I'll second it. Any corrections or notations? Wayne. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Consideration of personnel actions. Just one today, Wayne.
Move approval.
And I'll second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions pass.
This is my week of claims.
I thought maybe you'd try to take credit for this one. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
And I'll second. Any discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims pass. Other reports. We are fortunate to have Dr. Jennifer Garst, the Executive Director of Story County Community Foundation, presenting to us today on the happenings in the Story County Community Foundation. Hi, Jennifer. Hi. How are you?
Thank you for inviting me today. Can you hear me okay? Great. I'm here on the invitation of Rick to chat about the Story County Community Foundation. We are a nonprofit organization in the county. Legally, we are under the umbrella of the Des Moines Community Foundation, but we do make all the decisions locally in Story County. We have a Story County Board of Directors who supervises and sets policy and direction for the Story County Community Foundation. But we get the advantages of having the big boys down the street to help us with some of our legal and backroom work, which is very fortunate for our county because we don't have to duplicate the efforts. But again, we make the decisions locally. Our board of directors is representative of the entire county. We do have people from Story City, Huxley, Nevada, Ames, and surrounding areas, so it's not just Ames people. It's throughout the county. Next January, we're going to seat a new board member from COLA, which makes me very happy because we want to represent the entire county. The two main things the Story County Community Foundation does is we do grants and we build endowments or funds to help nonprofits, and those are two separate things. I will draw your attention to the insert of the handout I gave you. Look at the back. You can see the grants that the Story County Community Foundation recently gave out. We were able to give away almost $100,000 in grants. And the most common question is, where's the money come from? And you may know about the County Endowment Program. That is a portion of all the gaming revenue in our state-chartered gaming establishments are shared with every county that does not have gaming. And this last year, we are almost at $950,000 that our county has received from that program since 2005. 25% of the revenues that we receive in our county have to go into a permanent endowment for used for grant making, and 75% has to immediately go out the door. So that's how we have been able to grant since 2005 between $80,000 and $100,000 every single year to nonprofits and projects in our county. And if you can look through the list, Wayne, did you have a question?
No, you answered it. I was about to make a comment, but I thought better of it. I saw the attorney there.
This grant-making process is a competitive grant-making process. We received approximately $350,000 of requests this year from nonprofits and governmental organizations throughout the county. It is open to nonprofits, governmental organizations, or nonprofits that partner with somebody who is eligible. And I believe your organization, the supervisors, a couple years ago approved the Veterans Administration for accepting a grant to Legion Hall because we needed that governmental sponsor. We try our hardest to be representative of the county, and we do one $25,000 higher impact grant each year. And you probably are familiar with the primary health care, which is a federal grant that needed matching local dollars. So that was where our major grant went this year. And then you can see from all the other grants, they're kind of all over the board. This year, libraries did quite well. But we're having quite a few library expansions right now that we were able to partner with. These were the grants we gave away. We were not able to fund $240,000 of grants. So obviously it's a competitive process, but as I tell everybody, if you don't apply, I can assure you, you won't get any money. So that is the granting process. And then at the bottom of the back page, there's a youth philanthropy section. Of the money that we gave away this year, we've set aside $5,000 for a high school group made up of Nevada, Ames, and Gilbert High School students, and it's available to any student in the county, but those are the students where we draw from. They do their own competitive grant process. So they call for applications, they score the applications. You know, they do have supervision, but it's high school students giving these grants away. And I have to draw your attention to the application for that process is December 6th. So if you're interested in a grant from this group, you can apply by December 6th. All information is available on the Story County Community Foundation website. Okay. I'm going to move away from grants unless anybody has any questions. Okay. The next thing that the Story the County Community Foundation does is try to keep wealth local. I am representative of many people in our state where as soon as I hit 18, I was out of this state as fast as I could go, and I was never coming back. And many of our young people are leaving. We've talked about brain drain. We also have a wealth drain. When people pass away, their resources follow their kids, and their kids are no longer in this community or in Ames, and a lot of times they're not even in the state. The legislature of the state of Iowa was very concerned about the wealth drain, and they said we need to provide some tax incentives to create money that stays locally. And that's how the Endow Iowa Tax Credit Program happened. And that is a tax incentive of 25% Iowa tax credit for donations to community foundations, permanent endowments, where they only distribute 5% locally or annually, and also to Iowa charitable causes. So a lot of the community's nonprofits in our county have partnered with the community foundation to take advantage of that tax incentive. If you look at the interior of the handout I gave, that is the list of nonprofits that we currently work with. Each of these nonprofits have set up their own fund. So any donations to that fund is to the benefit of that nonprofit. So the community foundation doesn't have their mitts on any of this money. It's under the control of the community or the particular nonprofit. Now, since we're in Nevada, I will pick on the Nevada Public Library. Let me get a little more real. Let's say I love the Nevada Public Library, and they have a fund under their Friends Foundation. I give them $1,000 into their fund. That means they have $50 to use forever, every year, forever, because it's a 5% distribution. My advantage is I get to write $250 off the bottom of my Iowa taxes. If I'm in the 35% tax bracket, I get to take my normal federal deductions. So that $1,000 gift that's going to provide the library $50 a year forever is just cost me $400 to make. So it's a very nice tax incentive, and I use $1,000 because the vast majority of the donations we receive are under $1,000. Mm-hmm. We receive $10. Our largest one is something like $120,000. So it's we don't have just one person donating to these. We have many, many, many. So these are the nonprofits. Now, this is also an advantage of our relationship with Des Moines. In collective, at Story County Community Foundation, we have 90 funds worth $6 million. That money is invested with the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines and their $240 million of investment return. Last year, the rate of return for the funds under our management, the majority of them are in a long-term growth portfolio that returned 12.6%. So when I talk about my $50 a year forever, it's going to get bigger just because of growth. The average return for our funds has been 8% over 12 years. So, and this is investment returns that a lot of these funds are too small to get on their own. They get the investment power and expertise through their collective work through the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines. I am on a nonprofit board that has $1.5 million in its endowment. We were recently told by a large investment firm that they wouldn't take us anymore. We're too small. So many of our nonprofits just don't have enough money to buy the expertise that we can provide them. And again, I want to draw your attention to each person who makes a donation through the Community Foundation tells us where they want their money to go. They could choose to give to a Community Foundation fund, which is listed on the front, but the majority of money that we receive goes directly into a specific fund. And I recently had a donor joke to me, and he says, "You'll work with tree huggers and anti-tree huggers." And I said, "Yeah, we will. We'll work with anybody who is a qualified nonprofit." The other fund type that we have is we have 20 families in the county who have started funds, which we call donor-advised funds. So I could start the Jennifer Garst Fund. I could get the same tax advantages, but I get to choose how to spend the 5% each year, and it could go to any Iowa charitable cause of my choice. And I could change that choice each year. And then when I pass away or become incapacitated, I could leave the gifting rights to somebody else. Most people choose to give the gifting rights to their children. So it's a way of passing down wealth, but it's gifting rights, not money you can spend. I will draw your attention to the one graph I gave you. The Community Foundation is growing like a weed. If you notice, in 2010 to now, we have more than twice the assets in Story County. So this is Story County alone. With that 5% payout, we're starting to be able to spend $300,000 in our county each year. A few years ago, when the Board of Supervisors did an economic development strategic planning, the Community Foundation's name came up quite a few times in your report, and this graph shows why. This is money that's staying here, you know, predominantly. You can give, if I was a donor advised fund, I could give to Des Moines, but mostly the money stays right here in this county and is being able to be spent in this county. Not 100%, but a vast majority of it. And it's a way of keeping the resources here that might otherwise just leave. So that's what the Community Foundation is up to. I think we're doing a good job in our county, and I think I will start 3 new funds in the next month. I mean, the nonprofits in our county are understanding the benefits of endowment. We are a different kind of giving vehicle because we're forever. And I always tell people, please, please, please keep giving annual gifts to your favorite nonprofits because they need to keep their lights on and their services going. But this is the way to make that extra special, meaningful, forever gift to something that you love. And this is a way to do it, and a way that most people's kids are appreciative of that you're giving to your community. That's the end of kind of my spiel, unless you have lots of questions.
Not so much of the question, but Dr. Garst, I just, you know, hearing and knowing about the foundation and all the various needs that you fulfill with the various programs, this is very helpful just to have this type of information available. Because you know, different groups and nonprofits are oftentimes talking about applying for grants and type of things. And so if you've got something, you know, that you could refer to and point them as to point of contact, I think it's very valuable and very helpful. And I know a few years ago when the foundation was just first getting started, it just seemed like there were just a lot of hurdles to jump through, mainly the relationship between Story County and Des Moines and how all of that was going to factor it in. But it seems like that we've been able to overcome some of those issues, and I'm just really excited about the opportunities that we have in Story County for many of the not-for-profit agencies. So thank you for your leadership.
And I would draw your attention to our website has complete information about the grant process, so if anybody would be interested in any of the grants, complete information and application material is on the website. And we welcome applications, but it is a competitive process.
Well, Jennifer, it's really I'm so appreciative that you've taken this on as executive director, and I'm thrilled with the rate of growth that you're showing. And if 12% return and really only spending 5% is the norm, in addition to anything new that you're bringing in, it's really exciting where this thing could go in the future. And for us as supervisors, Wayne, so much of what the foundation does is kind of hand in glove with some of the work we do with our asset process. And we meet with libraries today at 1 o'clock, and you work with libraries this year. So I just thought it was important that you come and visit with us in a public forum like this, and I'm really appreciative that you did. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And can I take a moment to say a private or public thank you to Susie Sheerholtz.
Yes.
She was the founder and inspiration behind the Community Foundation, and she wrote the rules of the foundation, and we have term limits. So as of December 31st, she is no longer on the board of the Community Foundation in Story County. And so we're very sad to see her go. And she did step down as the unpaid volunteer executive director as of July 1. So it's because of her that our Community Foundation has done so well. And it's with sadness we're saying goodbye.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Susie. Okay. And thank you, Jennifer, for being here. Next item is consent agenda. Wayne, please add road closure 1424, utility permits 1429, 1430, and 1431.
Okay. Move approval with noted changes.
And I'll second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items, discussion and consideration of attorney office reorganization, County Attorney Stephen Holmes. And Teresa, I want to welcome you back. We're glad you're here with us. Stephen, I know this is something you and I have discussed just in passing a couple times. I'm appreciative that you're looking at your office and coming to share some of your ideas with us today.
Well, thank you. If you would mind indulging me for just a few minutes, I'd kind of like to give you a little bit of a historical overview for the past 25 years. I intend not to bore you to tears, but there have been a lot of changes that have taken place since I've come to the office. Changes in the law, the intentions of the legislature through statutory enactments that have brought about a variety of changes in the dynamics of what's required of the county attorney's office in terms of its staff. When I started 25 years ago, it was very customary that an attorney would probably spend 3, 4, maybe 5 years at the outside in the county attorney's office and then move on to private practice. And it was uncustomary in most of the county attorney's offices across the state because most of the county attorney's offices across the state are part-time, except in the larger jurisdictions where the Board of Supervisors, yourselves, had decided that a full-time county attorney was required, or the services of a full-time county attorney was required because of the nature of the business in that particular county. Most county attorneys are part-time. They have a private practice. They may have a part-time or a full-time assistant. And Story County is a middle-sized Iowa county, and because of its unique geographic location in the center of the state, close to Polk County and between Marshall counties and Boone counties, I think that the center of education here at Iowa State University, the center of the Department of Transportation, and others have certain draws, let's say, that have brought about more of a wider variety of happenings. The the job of county attorney has become more professional. For instance, when I started, as I began to say, there was no domestic abuse assault. That was a statutory enactment during the time that I've been here. If you're a fan of MeTV and you like Dragnet, Badge 714, you remember Jack Webb and Harry Morgan, when they started, they could walk into somebody's apartment because there was no such thing as really search and seizure issues, and there wasn't anything such as Miranda. Later on in that series, they began pulling out cards and Mirandizing people. Well, same thing has happened to us. I don't mean that in a joking fashion, but it's true. The dynamics of the county attorney's office has changed greatly. When I started as an assistant, there were five other assistant county attorneys, two in Ames that did simple misdemeanors and juvenile, and three in the main office. And that quickly went to four, us with the county attorney. And we had two part-time county attorneys who did civil work, Dennis Parmenter and Brian Humke, who went on, left the office, and went on to their private practices. It was over the span of 25 years, I bet you that I can count perhaps 50 to 60 different attorneys that have been through the office, and that's primarily because, again, based on the desires of individuals who get law degrees and they want to do the best for themselves. Historically, it's been difficult, I think, for me as an assistant and then as the county attorney to come to you and give you sort of a historical perspective on how things are changing. I myself was living through it, so in addition to carrying a caseload and dealing with the day-to-day, it was hard for me sometimes to stop and appreciate how it was changing around me, even while it was happening. So here we are today, and in my office, I have 10 assistants and myself. I still have a split county attorney's office, as you well know, because of the demands of the largest metropolitan area in the county wanting to essentially have and pay for a municipal court, which they essentially have, even though our court system is unified. They still have a local court that I have to service. And the demands of the county, of course, has changed. The population has grown approximately 25,000 people or more in the span of years that I've been here. We're now around 89 or so thousand people. And we're still about, I think, 10,000 underneath our closest comparison county, which is Woodbury County. Now, Woodbury County, for some years I've kept an eye on them in recent times to see how the county attorney in Woodbury County has been handling their business. Now, that's a tough jurisdiction to be in. It's not like this community. And they have 17 county attorneys. They have fewer support staff. Now, when I came here, we also began by bringing on a victim witness coordinator. That first was Becky Kinneman, and then that was increased to two, and Becky left, and then we've had a series of them. Up until recently, just recently, I had three. And now, due to some changes in terms of individuals' desires, I'm now down to one. And again, going back to our previous conversations, it has been interesting to me to look to Woodbury County to see if I might be better off having more attorneys and fewer staff, and kind of going back to a time when I started, where as an assistant, I prepared a lot of my own trial informations. I did a lot of my own subpoena work. I did a lot of my own victim contacts, setting up depositions. I'm still a little old-fashioned. I still do a lot of it myself instead of relying, as some of my assistants do or have been for quite a few years, on the victim witness staff. Now, again, just for the record, victim witness was came into being again at the insistence of the legislature to try and help victims of crimes, just like in the area of domestic abuse when the legislature decided that they would separate out a category of assaults from what had been the norm. They isolated it and they made statutory changes and made some distinctions that they felt were necessary to address some historical systemic problems with that part of our society. So what has now happened, or what I had been discussing, has come to pass in the way of now I have two less staff people. Now I could go and hire back two people in to fill those positions, but I don't want to. I think that now is a good time to turn, and let me tell you a few more reasons why. I can probably be the best example for a person who has forsaken a lot of my life, and I'm not being a martyr here, but over the span of 25 years, for a good portion of the job here, I was single, and that was pretty easy to do. But I think I have to recognize what it takes to keep and hold good people in the office. As I said, the dynamics of the office has changed. It used to be very customary for attorneys to come and go in pretty quick order. But now, because of the way the statutes are written, it's desirable for me to get an attorney in who wants to be a prosecutor. It takes a longer to train them. It takes more investment on our part. And so I want to be able to keep them. In order to keep them, one of the big parts of the job is how demanding is the job. Like I said, over the span of 25 years, I've probably been pretty bad about taking the necessary time that you should to repair yourself, to take on just regular, normal vacations. I think the longest vacation I had in 25 years was when I broke my leg 7 years ago, and I'm not joking. I can't ignore that with my staff. Right at the present time, well, some years ago, I sat down and I sort of did a numbers calculation, and I think that numbers calculation has remained valid right up until today. Basically, as an attorney in the office, even when I started, we had, or I would keep, around 80 to 100 indictable criminal cases pending at all times. And that doesn't include probation revocations, it doesn't include motion hearings, it doesn't include a variety of and sundry other matters related to those cases and other cases and forfeitures and things of that nature. That number, around 80, is ideal. I think if you push the 100 or you go into the 120 range, what happens is, as an attorney, you have to let things go. You can't devote your time and attention to all of the things that you have to in order to do a good job. So what that results in is it results in a lot of stress. The other thing is, I don't have attorney temps. There is no such thing. And because of the fact that constantly throughout the 25 years I've had turnover and I've had the demands placed on me, it has been really difficult, because when an attorney leaves, that means all of the cases that they're handling have to be picked up by the other attorneys in the office. And what it does is it makes for an atmosphere of tension and real stress among the other attorneys. And so at times when I've had only 8 or even 7 attorneys, when I've been down 2 or even 3 attorneys, everybody else has to pick up the pace, and there isn't any other way for me to do it. There isn't any other way for me to rely on it.
And this differs, of course. My attorneys aren't unionized. Maybe at some point in time they will be. But even at that, it wouldn't make up for the fact that I need to be able to compensate for this workload. The number of overall cases has increased, but I've tried to, by increasing staff, because basically, like I said, when I started, there were six, including the county attorney, and then went to seven, and then basically over the span of time, we've done a really good job, I think, efficiency-wise, in terms of the way we take in and handle cases, and I think the office has been admirable in that respect. I've had lots of great people, but I want to keep it that way. And plus, being here, being next to Polk County, as I've told you in the past, has been a real difficult matter, because Polk County is the big paycheck that's waiting down there, and I have lost several attorneys in recent times to Polk County. And they're always knocking on the door. They are always seeming to keep an eye on the best of the best that I get and wanting to hire them away. So all in all, this is all designed, and again, thanks for bearing with me, and I hope I didn't put you to sleep. But the dynamic is just this. I think that it's time for me to switch from victim witness. Now, I have two vacancies that I'd like to change, and because of the shifts in staff in recent times, and because I've got a three-quarter time and a half-time staff, clerical staff positions, and because I've had several attorney positions that I have not filled, in my current budget, I'm going to be able to replace two, at least based on the calculations I've gotten from the people who are more capable than I am in terms of numbers and behind me, it would appear that I'm going to be able to hire an experienced prosecutor and then a new prosecutor and not go over budget for this fiscal year. And then looking into the next fiscal year, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape and probably be able to come to you with a very, I think, reasonable increase in my budget of around $36,000. To me, the advantage of this is in this way. By having two additional attorneys, not only do I reduce the caseload, current caseloads are in the 100 case and upward range. By having a couple of additional attorneys, I'm going to be able to reduce that down again, and I think allow my attorney staff to lead more of a normal life. The addition of course will mean that I'll have more bodies to be able to go into court. That means I'll have more people to pick up and cover, which we're always required to do. It's very customary. It's sort of a joke in my office that the court views us all as interchangeable. Now, that isn't true of attorneys in private practice who are representing clients. But as far as my office goes, the judges do not find as an excuse the fact that an attorney is sick or an attorney is indisposed in some way. If it's your case, they expect to have someone down there regardless. And that puts a great demand, and that may be of some surprise to you. But, for instance, Mr. Clinton, if you had a case and you had a felony case that you had been working on for several months and for some reason you couldn't go down and cover a hearing, if you had a family emergency or whatever it was, that doesn't matter. And historically, the court makes us appear regardless. Now, that may not seem to be equitable, but being viewed as the state is a much different matter. And there are those things that happen to us and have happened to us for a long period of time. And I think for Teresa's sake, I mean, we have talked about this at length. I think that we have hammered this out, and we are prepared to, I think, shift some of the duties to the of the remaining person in victim witness, so that we're going to do a better job of handling or narrowing the category of what that person does back to, I think, more of what it should be. I think it had been expanded and expanded and expanded, which is sort of a natural, I think, consequence. When you put people into jobs, they want to, I think, expand what it is that they do. And naturally, as an employer, over time, these things come in increments, and you're approached with these ideas, and you say, well, yeah, you want to do that? Well, that's a good idea, because I'm really busy right here right now. And so perhaps that's the way they happen. It's a gradual creeping of, and then finally you wake up one day and you say, wow, how did that get to be like that? Well, it just is the way, the natural way of things. I have been thinking about this for some time. I have been weighing it and discussing and debating how it will better serve us and better serve the people of the county. And ultimately, I guess I look at it in two ways: as the county attorney and as a prosecutor. As the prosecutor, there's clearly an advantage. There is absolutely an advantage. There's no question to me to be able to have more attorneys, to be able to take on more business and be in more places. As the county attorney, I think I'm looking at it in terms of, well, overall, how is it to appear to you? How does it to appear to the public? How is it going to actually be a betterment to the community? Well, I think that it's the versatility in having attorneys who can go into court and who can handle a wider variety of matters and who essentially operate with my authority. And staff can't negotiate on cases, even though I think in the past some of them wanted to. And it was unfair, I think, because I think certain attorneys, again, who are my employees, would have a propensity, because they're busy, to want to have that staff person perhaps attempt things and do things for them that they really shouldn't do. And it's a valid criticism. It is a valid criticism. So looking to the future, Woodbury County has 17 attorneys. Even if I increased, I'd still be a handful underneath Woodbury County with 10,000 more in population. But again, Woodbury County is a little tougher neighborhood, I think. And I'm not wishing that on us.
Thank you.
But to me, again, Alyssa and Teresa have looked at the numbers, and Jessica, it would appear that we can do this without increasing or asking for a budgetary increase in this fiscal year.
Well, yeah, Stephen, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate you digging in and analyzing what is appropriate for the county attorney's office here in Story County. I think this is exactly the right time to do it, as you have some staff changes going on. And to me, real efficiency is more about what we're able to get done with the resources we allocate, rather than drawing a line in the sand and saying, well, there's where you were, you know, that's where you need to stay. I am so appreciative that you would come forward with a plan that does not, in fact, increase staff at all. I mean, I think that's just really important that we underline and we say, we're not talking about any kind of staff increases. We're talking about redefining what you do with a few of your staff so that you can be more productive, more efficient for the people of Story County. And I just want to tell you how much I appreciate it. Wayne, you got any questions?
No, I think historically, these type of requests, obviously, the question has always come down to the need based on caseload and based on our ability to serve the public. One of the issues that I think we always hear is that, and I'm assuming that if you have a staff of attorneys and you have a high caseload, you're going to have delays in timeliness by which certain things are going to be able to be addressed. And that, I think, sometimes can be a positive, and it also can be a very negative in many situations because you don't have the staff time to really devote to the case at hand. And I think the issue have always been for us is when requests like this comes to us, what is the budgetary implication? Is this going to mean that we have to look for additional resources above and beyond what has already been allocated? And as I look at this proposal, this is, as Supervisor Sanders has said, this is really a more or less a staff reallocation of resources, but also giving you the flexibility of having a more professional attorney position that could help coordinate some of the other kind of duties where a staff person filling in would not be able to provide that. So I think it's certainly a very valid one, but I think you have gone through the processes that we have felt are essential by internally looking at how effective this would be, and then working with our human resource person in terms of looking at all of the challenges that, you know, we basically say, because at the end of the day, for us, we have to be able to look at each other department, each other elected office in terms of when they come to us in terms of wanting to either increase staff, what is the rationale behind it? Is it going to be in the best interest of Story County? And then are the resources available to meet that? And in this case, I think you have done your due diligence and have brought forth a plan that I could certainly be supportive of.
Well, and I think Stephen hit Wayne on one of the key elements. When you look at increasing the number of staff, you do just naturally have this professional creep that goes on where the job changes over time and it becomes different than, sometimes more than you ever expected. And so I think it is just a really valuable exercise for us to go through, really anytime you have some major changes in staffing, to take a look and say, okay, now maybe that was right for us 5 years ago, but is that system what's right for us today and 5 years in the future? And I just think they've done an outstanding job taking a look at that. Really appreciative that there's no budgetary implications this year. I think I completely recognize that this will, in fact, cost us just a little bit more. But I look at what we're going to be able to do because of that, what we're going to get out of it, and it's really encouraging to me. I do think we ought to ask our HR director, Alyssa Wignall, if she has any comments. I know that she looked at this pretty closely and worked with Teresa and Jessica and Steven as they put it together. And Alyssa, you don't have to, if you don't have anything you need to add, that's fine. But okay. Just wanted to give you the opportunity.
Right.
Wayne, any further questions?
No.
And I do want to say one thing. By this change, I don't see or foresee that there's going to be any decrease in victim services.
Right.
What I'm actually hoping is that the attorneys themselves, being more involved, will do a better job. Because, again, it's my style. I just concluded a rather large case, and I deal with everyone myself. And I think in the final analysis, everyone is much more pleased because they're hearing it from me. They're not hearing it from someone who works for me, now, meaning a staff person. This will be a staff attorney, and I think that this, again, kind of harkens back to when I started. And basically, we did a lot more. And I think that it was a better job because there's just anytime you have an intermediary at any critical point, there's always that possibility that the message somehow gets diluted. And so I think that, like I said, our victim.
Just to be sure I'm clear, what I heard you say earlier was we were going to take the one remaining victim witness coordinator position and more clearly and tightly define what those responsibilities are so that our attorneys, so if we're adding two attorneys, but all of our attorneys now, there are fewer items that they delegate to that victim witness, and they maintain more of them. So their caseload may go from 100 down into the 80s, but they're going to be doing more with each of those cases.
More directly, that's correct.
Right. Yep.
Very good. Wayne, any?
Good summation.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nope.
All right. This one is action, if yep. you desire to make any motion.
I so move that we accept the county attorney's recommendation to reallocate his office and make the necessary changes as far as staffing is concerned.
All right. I have a motion to approve the reorganization as presented. I'll second that. I'll tell you guys how much I appreciate you digging in. Teresa, it's really good to have you back. Thanks for digging in on all this. Any further conversation? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Discussion consideration of the 2014 ISAC Wellness Program. See, you could have, Alyssa, you could have come up a minute ago and then just stayed put.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to bring this to you. ISAC rolls out a new wellness program every year. They kind of switched around the way they are administering their wellness programs. They are going to have it on a calendar year instead of a fiscal year now, at the request of some of the other counties. So this one runs from January 1st until the end of October, and it's not quite a full year, but that allows them time to get everything wrapped up before the end, figure out the percentage decreases or the incentives for the county as far as their premiums for next year or the following year. This one's a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. The employees, the actual responsibilities of the county are a little bit less than what they have been, especially this past program. There was quite a few requirements of the county. Mainly just we still have to, the wellness committee needs to meet four times a year and have a supervisor that's involved. That's the main two county requirements. Now, the requirements of the employees that are involved in the group health program, they can, this year they're going to do it on activity points, and each individual can earn up to 5 points. There's some different options. They can have a preventative exam. They can complete a wellness assessment, and then they can also participate and complete in wellness programs. For each point that that an employee receives or they qualify for, they can get a $50 incentive, taxable incentive, up to $250. The way the county receives a rate decrease is based on the number of points. So if we have 50 people, they give an example, 50 people, if you get 100 points out of those 50 people, we do qualify for a 2% rate reduction. That doesn't mean that every employee has to earn a point.
Right.
It's an average. So you might have some that are earning the 5 points and some that are not participating at all, which kind of helps us out.
Which is what we've run into.
Yeah.
This year it was strictly based on the percentage of employees that participated.
Correct.
Now it's going to be about the number of points, that whatever employees decide.
Yep. Yep. So I brought this to you now just because I want to meet with the wellness program or the wellness committee next week. I want to get everything kind of in order before I'm gone for a few weeks.
You doing something here later this year?
So I want to get it all kind of laid out. We do have a program that's going to roll out the end of January. So we do need to get moving on that. Otherwise, I think it's a good opportunity for the county to reduce their premiums as much as we possibly can. It directly impacts each and every employee that's involved in the health insurance. So,
well, that's the item I would point out is not only do they get the $50 gift cards, if we generate enough points, their insurance rates actually go down, not the amount the county's putting
right.
in. So.
Correct. It would be their contribution.
Them.
And,
right.
and I do try to get that out to the employees by telling them, you know, a 5% rate reduction on a family premium annual basis is pretty substantial.
Big deal. Wayne, any questions?
Nope. Sounds good. I'm
right.
well familiar with it. So,
this is a consideration item.
Move approval of the 2014 ISAC Wellness Program as presented.
And I'll second it. Any further conversation? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Alyssa, thank you very much. Next is agency reports, Central Iowa Tourism Convention and Visitors Bureau. I keep hearing rumors that there's going to be some kind of vote in March. I hope you're going to talk to us about that.
If you have enough time.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what I want for lunch.
Oh, you guys know all about it already, I'm sure. If not, we're going to make sure you do after today. Before we talk about that, I do have a couple other things that I want to bring up. We just returned from a conference on the American Softball Association, and I wanted to publicly thank, this is an event that Ames and Nevada partnered on, and they received at the national convention, they received the award for one of the top tournaments of the country for this last year, and there were only 10 recognized out of over 60-some tournaments that were held. And I just can't say enough about the cooperation between Ames and Nevada and also the facility. The SCORE Complex is just an amazing facility that everyone in the county should really be proud of, the athletic complex that's there. So just a quick note on that. Also on some cooperative efforts, the Iowa Department of Tourism through Central Iowa Tourism Region has changed how they do their annual grants. And they have many more categories than they've had in the past. And the Convention and Visitors Bureau for upcoming in 2014 received two new grants that we've never been able to apply for before. And the first one, which we're excited about both of them, but the first one is a $2,000 grant, which we are going to use on our website and include more regional events and activities. So we really hope to encompass all of Story County and a lot of the festivals and activities in the smaller communities, because that is a huge draw, and that is something that when visitors are coming, whether it be parents for ISU orientation or whatever else happens throughout the year, these are the things that a lot of individuals like to attend because they're different than what they may be have in their areas. Also, we received another $2,000 grant from the state to do hospitality training, and this will be available for all of the members of the Convention and Visitors Bureau this coming year on customer service. We also applied with Dubuque, the Quad Cities, and Waterloo for a Silos and Smokestack grant, and we received $5,000 grant from them, and we will be presenting and exhibiting at the Powwow Conference in Chicago this year, which is an international conference for group tours. And as part of that, this grant will be used. We will actually be offering a fam trip to these international. We will be bringing 50 of them, arriving in Chicago, bringing them to Dubuque, then to Waterloo, then to Ames, and touring our agricultural facilities here, taking them back to the Quad Cities and then Chicago. And we hope that this will become a route for international tours, especially in the agricultural arena. And we were extremely successful with our ag tours in Central Iowa last year. Not only we did some for the Farm Progress Show, but this year we did all of Nationwide Tour Group sent 600 and some individuals through our ag tours. So it's become very popular. So we're excited about all of those grants. So that's sort of a wrap-up of 2013. In 2014, a few of the things that are going on is it is Ames sesquicentennial. So just need to make that public here, and there will be several activities next year for Ames. Also, from an event standpoint, it is probably the busiest year that we have seen yet for unique events coming to Central Iowa. And it starts off with things such as ISU Athletics will be hosting the first and second round of NCAA Women's Tournament again. Odyssey of the Mind returns. We are hosting the USA Ultimate High School Championships, which is Ultimate Frisbee in the state. Future Problem Solving is a new program that will become. It's much like Odyssey of the Mind, and they will be here in back-to-back weeks. The Hay Expo returns to Central Iowa, which is a smaller show but associated with the Farm Progress Show. We are also hosting, for the first time ever, the National Junior Disability Championships. And this is made possible because of the new ISU sports complex and track that they have. So a phenomenal event of that. Also, the Urban Ag Conference, which I'm not sure if either of you were at last year, but it's hosted by the state legislature, and it's held in the summertime, and that was in Des Moines last year. It is moving to Story County next summer, which will be good for us. Then we have the Farm Progress Show, and then we end the year with the NCAA Volleyball Regional Championship. So just a great year for great events. With that being said, you do have an invitation in front of you because the year will start off on January 9th. That is the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau annual meeting. So that invitation is extended to the county supervisors, as the Story County does receive membership in the Convention and Visitors Bureau for your contribution to CITR every year. Then we have this other little thing going on in Ames, which is another great partnership between Iowa State University and the community. Currently, Ames and Iowa State University have such partnerships as SciRide, which is just an amazing transportation system. Also, we have the new aquatics complex, which is on university land, but actually owned by the city. And then you have the Ames and ISU Ice Arena, which is a jointly owned facility for the benefit of both. We are looking at taking on another such project, which is a convention center project that would actually be a partnership between the two. We started this project about 5 years ago, and over the last several years, starting in 2011, it started off with about a $52 million project. In 2013, at the beginning of the year, we had whittled and looked at various components of this and brought it down to a $40 million project. With that, it is basically adding convention space or multi-use space to the north side of the Scheman Building. So the gray on there is the existing Scheman Building, and the new facility would just be on the north side, where it says the new exhibit. With that, we are looking at a multi-use space, which is that actual, the new area, and that's about a $32 million, and those costs are at 2015 construction rates, at a 3% increase from today for the next 2 years. In addition to building the new additional space, there would be some extensive remodeling of Scheman, which has already begun on the ground floor. If you've been into Scheman lately, the new meeting spaces there are much nicer and have much more technology than the ones on the upper two levels. But to connect this, there's certain remodeling in Scheman that is actually required to make it function. To give you an idea of what the space would look like, this is the ground floor, and the majority of the space is actually elevated so that it will be on the same level as when you go to Benton Auditorium, so it's actually up one level where you have your major lobby space. So underneath that structure, we would maintain most of the existing parking, but it would be covered in accessible parking. There is some space that is needed on the lower level of Scheman, and in essence, it would be an area, a lobby area that would have two small meeting rooms available for the public. There would be some storage area in there in the blue, and there would be some additional restrooms, and there would be escalators. One of the new enhancements would be escalators that would allow traffic flow between the three levels of Scheman. On the next level, which is where all of the major construction would occur, it's considered first floor in Scheman, but it's the second level up. You can see the large sort of salmon-colored area on the top of there, and it is a 35,000-square-foot single expansion. To give you an idea of the size of that, the floor of Hilton, when there's nothing on there, is 20,000 square feet. This would allow us to do banquets of over 2,000 people. It would allow us to do 200 exhibit booths, and those are the types of things that we need for the conferences and conventions that are coming in. And then the third floor would literally just be open because it would be a two-story structure, and there would be some mechanical on the third floor. Otherwise, the third floor of Scheman would stay the same. On the other level, it also did give us some back-of-the-house functions. There would be a brand-new kitchen facility also at that level to service that area. To give you an idea, on the right-hand side here, you can see the existing Sheman, and literally there would just be a pre-function space that would attach it to the new portion of it. So the beauty of this is also that this new structure could be built without interfering with the Sheman business and the activity that goes on there day in and day out, and then it would be closed when it was actually connected. And then the remodeling of Sheman would be done on availability, so we would be able to continue to service existing clients, which we think is extremely important for this time frame. This would be sort of, again, how the space could be used. It is arranged so, and I can show you in another slide, that you can actually drive vehicles directly onto the floor from this level. So from an exhibit space, it would allow us to do some type of consumer shows that we currently don't do in Ames, whether it be a boat show, a home show, those types of events that we don't have the space and or the accessibility for those shows. This is sort of what it would look like from Lincoln Way. It would not really extend out. There would be significant green space yet between Lincoln Way and the Sheman Building. It would just go out to about where the parking is now. This is from standing right in front of Hilton, looking it directly over at it. You can see how there is parking underneath it, and it is actually raised because it's more functional that way, but it also does keep it out of the floodplain. From the southwest side, you can just sort of see how it's attached to the north, again, supporting Sheman, sort of attached to Sheman. By keeping Sheman as, it was designed as a continuing education building, but has become sort of over the last 40 years by default Ames's convention center. By adding this to it and keeping the existing events there, the local spending of visitors, of just out-of-town attendees to conferences there, is estimated at right around $30 million in today's dollars. So the hospitality industry is important to the entire area because it does bring outside dollars into the community. We're not just trading dollars within the community itself, and produces significant jobs and local payroll. Many of these jobs are part-time jobs, which are also beneficial for the new enrollment at Iowa State University for many of the students. And that is the quick summary. And there are only four dates next year that we can have a community election. And the one when we felt that the most of the Ames citizenry would be in town, including students, is March 4th. So this will actually go to a public election before I'm back to give my next quarterly report.
And how many community outreach presentations are you contemplating prior to that?
As many as we possibly can get.
Okay, because I think that is, again, extremely important. I think this has been a dream, you and several others have had for a number of years, and it's exciting that we're finally at a stage where we have some plans in place that we can actually show the voters what amenities this would bring to our community. And already the success ratio of all the folks that come there and the report, I think the raving reports that we receive from visitors, I think it's been outstanding. But I think that goes a lot to your leadership and all the people that have volunteered to be part of this. We truly do have great ambassadors for our community.
Without a doubt.
And so I think it looks really exciting.
Well, this is just something that we need to get done. And I'm really appreciative of the work you're putting in to get it done. And now we just need to push ahead to March 4th. And
we looked at we just had a CSL report come in, which gave us like 10 different options for funding such facilities around the country. And really the only mechanism that's available to Ames and Iowa State University is this unique partnership. And Iowa State is willing to pay for half of it if the citizens of Ames will pay for the other half. So it is a $19 million bond issue. Which will raise
it's a great value for the citizens of Ames with the university stepping up and basically matching dollar for dollar the contribution of citizens of Ames. The part you didn't touch on that I think is important to throw out there is the opportunities that our small community groups will have because of a building like this. And it can really become, in a lot of ways, a nice community meeting space for a lot of some of these smaller events.
It can. We're looking at these types of facilities do not generate enough cash flow to cover their operations every year. So we are looking at also a unique arrangement is that the visitors coming to Ames that pay hotel motel tax will actually be subsidizing that. So it will not be the county, it will not be the city of Ames, and it will not be the university. But it will be the visitors that pay that hotel motel tax. And by paying that and by using that, we will make some of the space available to nonprofit groups at no charge because we're already subsidizing it to some extent. So it is a very, very unique model. And when you talk about a good deal, to rebuild Scheman and a convention center today, for the $19 million, we're getting about $120 million
right.
facility.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your
Keep
time.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know if there's anything we can do to help.
Absolutely.
Next is departmental reports, and we're going to start with facilities management and our director, Cal Pearson. Cal, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, as usual, the department's been busy. Like to start off with some numbers as I usually do on our work orders for the different areas quickly. Administration building, we had 100 work orders this past quarter and 2 on calls. Community life group homes, we had 120 requests and 13 on calls. Human Service Center, we had 99 work orders and 3 on calls. And the Justice Center, 77 work orders and 7 on calls and 10 other work requests that didn't classify into a facility, with a total of 406 work order requests and 25 on calls for the quarter. So that's a pretty substantial amount. It keeps us busy in our day-to-day activities. We also had 2 snow days in the last quarter that I wasn't real excited about. It was a little early. Some of the highlights past quarter, September, we assisted the auditor's office with voting supply delivery, and that went real well. Continued work on the multi-purpose and conference area at the HSC building that's ongoing. Hopefully after the first year, we can get carpet down and hopefully be using that sometime late winter, early spring is our intentions on that. October, we received a replacement truck for the one that was totaled in May this summer. All the equipment's put on it. It's ready for snow use and whatever we need to use it for. We also did some parking lot repair by Manats, the west side of the main lot at the Justice Center, and some repair in the back. That's kind of an ongoing project. We'll need to do some more next year. And also we recarpeted the Human Service Juvenile Probation Office over in Ames. And in November, we did another voting supply delivery for the auditor's office. We had some safety data sheet training up at Secondary Roads, and we also did a HSC parking lot repair by Manats over there. So that parking lot is in a lot better shape. We pulled some cable for the treasurer's office for her camera project that we're working on. Cable's all pulled. Also, I had a tower inspection here at this building on the radio towers, and I'd like to put that on the agenda for next week. I think that's from the information I'm getting back from the inspectors, it wasn't favorable, and I'd like to speak to the board in more detail about that situation.
Yeah, I'd appreciate if you get that to us.
Other than that, we're ready for winter, and if you have any questions, be glad to
Yeah, you continue to do a great job. Yep. We appreciate your work. Any questions for Cal?
Nope, not at all.
We'll look forward to the tower report. I say that kind of a little facetiously, Cal. I'm not all that excited about it. So, thanks. A next departmental report is IT with Barb Steinbeck. Barb, are you all phones all the time right now?
I am. And I can say that with a smile because it was a very successful rollout. I don't want to admit that I was surprised, but there weren't as many issues as could happen, and in my experience, usually do happen. So hats off to LightEdge. I know within the department, we complained, another email, another conference call to plan it, but it all paid off. There were just a few little minor tweaks that we had to do. After we went live, we got a call from someone last week asking when we were going to get her voicemail set up, and apparently she'd missed the email I sent out that you have to get this initialized. So there was no way you could know things like that through osmosis, so if anybody has issues, they really need to make sure they contact the IT department. Otherwise, we're not mind readers. But I was very pleased. And also had another bit of good news on that project. We kind of debating, the connection has been landed in Ames, so the next logical step would be Community Life, CLP. But I got some good news over the weekend that the connection in Nevada will be delivered in December. So I think we'll bypass CLP until we find out exactly where they're at. And our next rollout will be the engineering building and then the admin building. We kind of want to steer clear of the sheriffs until they get their 911 system in place. And that's scheduled, I believe, the first week in January. Yep. So, but it does cause, I know, for the county attorney, since they're split, it does cause some confusion. You know, that's no longer the four-digit dialing since we're not in the same phone system. So
yeah, that's probably saved Jessica Reynolds 6 or 7 phone calls for me because I'm not willing to dial the extra 4 numbers that I've got to hit 9 and then all the other.
And it's not long distance. It's just that, you know, we have to dial more numbers now. So that's been a big part of what IT's been working on. I also just wanted to give a brief update on the DOT fiber project. It has made the connection into the Justice Center. They worked on that last week. They poured the cement yesterday, I think. I haven't heard that they haven't. But as with everything else, they had a big surprise when they opened up the former connection. We don't know quite who did it. We think Paytech did it, but it was unsupervised. And a fiber loop should be just that, a loop, connection here, connection here. And it was kind of like they made a half circle with Legos because they had a connector here, a connector here, a connector here, way too many, which slows down the speed of the data transfer. But also some of those connections were crushed. And we're lucky we didn't lose connectivity. So it was a good thing that we got in there. They repaired that. They did it the way it should be and poured the cement yesterday. Now we have to do
Go back. Who did the original one?
We think Paytech.
We don't know that.
Well, because Paytech no longer exists. Windstream has purchased Paytech, and they didn't have their hands in it. It was either Paytech or McLeod. There's no documentation on exactly who did it. But long story short, two companies that no longer exist. Yep. So there's no recourse. But as soon as we repair some of the work that needs to be done on the ICN's portion of that DOT fiber, we'll be able to do our connections. So we still haven't paid that $15,000 yet, but I know that's
good thing.
That's looming. Right. We're putting that off as long as possible. Well, I wanted to go back and revisit. I neglected to talk about the phone upgrade, and it kind of ties into what Cal had mentioned before about the towers on this conservation. Sorry. Is that better? I had mentioned in previous meetings that conservation's connection is at its limit. It's very slow. They're adding more things to it every day. And if we put the phone system on top of that, there would be absolutely no connectivity. We had talked about in our CIP meetings about a microwave connection, which would be roughly $20,000. Now that there's a question about connecting it here to the admin building, we don't know if that's going to work. We don't know where it will be connected, in other words, if these towers are replaced or if not. So we've asked another vendor to do a reevaluation of fiber there. Initially, they had told us it would be $250,000 to connect conservation with fiber to an existing line. So we're hoping that having another company reevaluate it, we might have lower or better figures. And that's not throwing out the microwave connection. It's just an alternative in case that isn't going to be an option for us. So other things, I think it's important to note that we finally have a DR solution for our AS400 financials and payroll systems. In the past, we have not had that. So if our AS400 box had gone down, we wouldn't have any recourse. Right now, what we're doing, we're working with Solutions, who's our payroll vendor, and we're paying them a monthly fee to house backups. We have 14 backups that we do. We send it once a week. And then in the event of a disaster or catastrophe, we are able to use their hardware for 30 days under the current arrangement. So I think within 30 days, in the event of a disaster, we should know whether we're going to live or die. So I think that's a good solution. But it amazed me when I came here that we did not have a backup solution for, I mean, the most important part that runs the county. So I think we can all rest a little easier now. And that's kind of, other than the hardware replacements, which keeping Brian hopping, when we started the hardware replacement project for this year, we had 170 Windows XP machines that needed to be replaced by April. There's just no question, because that's going away. And we're down to 60 now, so we've made a lot of headway. I know we're getting tired of seeing all the boxes all over, but after that's completed, then we'll have some breathing room and we'll be able to stick to our five-year rotation for computers.
Good.
Questions?
No, thank you for your continued
Barb,
work.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Absolutely. Next is liaison assignments. Wayne, anything?
Very quickly, I met with Ron Christensen yesterday for our regularly monthly meeting, and pretty much the majority of the time was spent on looking at his proposed budget that he will be bringing forth to us, looking at revenues and expenditures and projections, and I was very comfortable with the scrutiny that he has and his staff has shown in trying to put this together. He has worked with Deb looking at some billings to the region through the e-claim process, and I'm very encouraged with the figures that he's projecting that he will be sharing with us at a later time. And so there was the ongoing discussion of just where we were right now and then how we should move forward in the next several months with so much of the uncertainty. But it was an excellent discussion, and I felt that was we'll hear more from him. So I don't want to throw out any particular numbers at this time because it was just still preliminary. Mm-hmm. But he did provide me with a kind of a preliminary schedule as to how he projects things to be at this point in time. So I think I was very encouraged by that. So that was the majority of what our discussion centered around. So
yeah, and you know, Ron continues to do a great job along with his staff in very difficult circumstances. Wayne, I believe you're aware of both. I know you're aware of one of them. I believe you're aware of the second one. But had a very nice meeting. I'm appreciative to County Attorney Holmes and Jessica Reynolds, along with Deb Shildroth, for joining me in a meeting with Jane Halliburton yesterday to discuss CLP specifically. I think that meeting went very, very well. I'm really appreciative of former Supervisor Halliburton taking the time to share some of her expertise with us. And then tomorrow, several of us, Ron included, will go down and meet with Ireley Ball. Just again, Wayne, the goal here is for us to look at every possible solution and really try to ascertain what direction we're headed so that we can make some of these budgetary decisions that we need to make this year. There's nothing easy about this, and if we maintain the focus of the services and those clients that are impacted by the services and keep that first and foremost in our minds, I think we'll get where we need to go. It's just not easy, and it's a lot of people working a lot of hours to try to figure it out. So thanks for your leadership, both as our liaison to CLP and as chair of the regional board.
Yes. Thank you.
I don't have anything else. That takes us to public forum number two. Since we don't have any members of the public left in the audience, Drew, with all apologies to you, I'll say, does anybody want to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to announcements from the supervisors.
No, just this Thursday. I will be in Cedar Rapids Thursday and Friday for the NACO Resiliency Conference Forum that is put on by President Linda Langston from Iowa, who is the NACO president. And we've got a lot of folks as first responders and emergency management and so forth, and looking at how counties respond to disaster preparedness and things like this. So I'm hoping to bring back some helpful information that could be shared with our local folks as well. So other than that, that's about it.
Well, as always, we appreciate you representing the Story County Board of Supervisors on those kind of things. You do a great job for us. And if there is nothing else, that take a motion
move,
to adjourn.
I would so move adjournment.
And I'll second all those in favor. Please say aye. Aye. We're adjourned. Yeah.